Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to week 6 of Deliberate Practice on the Coach and Coordinator Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about attention to detail in an up-tempo environment. And joining me is our guest host, Andy Ryland. Andy, I love these conversations we've been having over the course of the season, and I'm excited about this one today as well.
No, this is one of my favorite topics. I think it gets down to the kind of the root of coaching, teaching, and communication science. So hopefully we'll have some good ideas that guys can put into practice tomorrow.
Yeah, and let's set this up by kind of going over, I think, what has become a challenge in coaching, potentially even a problem in coaching, is this idea of the up-tempo practice environment and balancing that with, well, we coach off film. And I do think it's a balance. I think the up-tempo environment presents a lot of challenges to what really was the traditional way of coaching things. And if you remember back to your days as a player, there were a lot of those long dissertations out on the field. And those seem to be productive to the coach who's explaining to that one player. But as you're going to hear about in one of these clips here, the idea or the thought process behind it, we're going to talk with Coach Eric Shenander from Nebraska and bring in a clip from one of his podcasts. But he mentions Chip Kelly and Scott Frost saying, when you stop for one guy, the other 100 guys are sitting around doing nothing. So you may only have that 1 minute, but it's taking away 100 minutes of practice. So I really think that's a very good point in this whole thing. I think the up-tempo environment gives us an opportunity to be much more clear and concise with what we want to get across to our players as coaches. But I think we have to find ways to get that attention to detail into this as well.
Yeah, I think this is a great clip, and I, you know, really pay attention to when coach talks about, you know, correcting technique and assignment on the run and the difference between stopping practice and doing that. That was one of my key takeaways. I advise coaches to listen for that aspect.
Yeah, there's a lot here in this next clip, and we're going to let it run here and go back to our podcast with Coach Eric Shenander, defensive coordinator at Nebraska. And he's going to talk about balancing between practicing up-tempo and making sure that we're still teaching our players. Coach, when you look at kind of the up-tempo style of practice that, you know, everybody's moved to, you hear quite a few guys say, well, you know, I just coach off of film. And I know, having done some research on you, you really value the teaching side of that. How does that sit with you, that idea that you're just going to run through practice, but you're not going to really coach, you're not going to really teach? I mean, there's that, I feel like, that balance you got to find between being the up-tempo, but you still have to be teaching out on the field. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think it depends on how you look at it. If you look at it from an old-school mentality where, man, I didn't get to correct that guy for the 2 minutes on the field after the play where I used to be able to, it hurts a little bit. But when you think about it from the Scott Frost, the Chip Kelly point of view, where the 2 minutes we just spent for you to correct that guy was 2 minutes times 100 other guys, that's 200 minutes we just wasted in practice. So why don't we just move on to the next play? If you want to pull that guy aside as a position coach and or a GA, great, pull him aside and correct him, but we need to keep rolling, and then we'll correct everybody else off the film. And I feel about it like everybody else does. There's some times where I would love to slow it down and make some more corrections, but I don't think it's fair to the rest of the team. That's not a conducive teaching environment. You wouldn't do that in a lecture, I don't think. If somebody got a question wrong on a quiz, you wouldn't stop the lecture and go back and correct him, because 99% of the students got it right and one person got it wrong. You'd probably see him after class. And it depends on what you want to coach. I care a lot about in practice coaching effort and communication. I mean, I can get those done on the run, and I think our position coaches do a great job of coaching technique and assignment that way. And it also depends on how you structure practice too. We never have a practice where obviously, when we get in a team setting, an individual setting, and a team setting, when we're doing drill work, that thing is moving. We're flying. We're as fast as probably anybody in the country. I haven't been had the chance to go to everybody's practice, but I would think ours are pretty close to as fast as everybody. And then there's also always when you're talking about how do you structure practice, there's always a teach period built in there. And for us, that's going to be right after a team period or right before a team period, however Coach Frost wants to do it that day. There's going to be a 4 minute, a 5 minute walk and talk period. So we get a break for our kids. We want them to go as fast as they can in those team periods, but we understand they need a break. But how can we get a break that's constructive? Well, we can get a teach period where it's probably slower than a walkthrough, where I can make corrections and or I can get guys ready for the next period. So I think if you have that structure in your practice schedule, it allows you to coach off the tape much, much better and feel good about it out there.
Yeah, and I think, I'm a proponent of moving fast in practice, and I remember those days, even as a player, where coach would stop things, and it was like became monotony of waiting, because you want to go as a player. You want to go.
Right.
But I think what I found as a coach in working in that system that – you start to become more efficient. You actually develop a language for coaching. I think, lack of better terms, a language that is more concise, that now maybe where it did take that minute-long dissertation before, you're saying something in two or three words, that because you've installed that language with the players, they understand what you're talking about and can make those corrections. Is that something you've found in your evolution as a coach?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's one thing that Coach Frost talks a ton about with our guys, and I don't want to get into the whole story of him, but he learned it, I think, from some of the Blue Angels guys maybe came and talked to us from the pilots, and they were talking about, as they moved through their mission, talking about keywords very quickly and efficiently, and I think one of those guys went to one of his meetings as a wide receiver coach, and his biggest point to him after the meeting, Coach Frost was like, critique me or whatever. He's like, well, you guys go so fast in practice. You go so fast in the games. Why do you go so slow in the meeting? And I think that kind of turned a light on for Coach. So now in all meetings, he wants us to go fast in the meetings. He wants us to talk fast. He wants us to use keywords and phrases in the meeting room. That's going to carry over to practice. And another thing, when you talk about things like that, is – are you on the same page with the rest of the coaches? So that one thing I don't like is, those are my guys, don't talk to my guys. They're all our guys. The whole team is our guys. So we want all of our coaches to be able to coach every single person. And if you're all on the same page with the verbiage, that becomes much easier. Like for us, when we're talking about tackling, we're talking about long stride, short stride, shuffle and shoot. And everybody in our staff can talk to those kids about that, and they can – whatever verbiage they want to use. You didn't short stride there, but even feet got you beat. As we turn over it to offense, and this is very, very thought out, when we go to blocking, it's long stride, short stride, strike and drive. What does it matter? Well, it matters because as a defensive coordinator, I can coach up a receiver that might be 40 yards down the field if I'm standing back in the post about him blocking, and or if I'm coaching a guy's on kickoff return on defense, I can say, hey, don't worry about blocking technique. You've done it a million times. Instead of long stride, short stride, shuffle and shoot, long stride, short stride, strike and drive. Just like I can coach the offensive guys up on special teams very, very quickly as well. So I think the verbiage is huge when you want to go fast, but it's not, I'm on my own doing the verbiage. You have to be on the same page with the rest of the staff. And that's things that need to get talked about in meetings that I think get left by the wayside a little bit.
Andy, some really great points there. What are your takeaways from what Coach Shenander had to say?
Well, I think one of the big things is, obviously, you had mentioned that the time to stop and, you know, give that lecture or even to repeat a play. Now, I'm a big believer in not repeating plays, because if you're repeating a play for one guy's mistake, to his point, you're wasting the other guy's. You're wasting 200 minutes because the other guy's got it right. So how do we correct individuals on the run? And I think it's a great way for coaches to start challenging themselves and think about how are they correcting and how are they offering instruction.
I like Coach's point that they are going to go fast and they're going to communicate in very concise language. In Brevity Code, you and I have talked about that before on this podcast, and he mentions that Coach Frost sat down with some of the Blue Angels, and he learned from that, and it was something they ingrained also into the way they would install in meetings, so that they're working kind of up-tempo, Brevity Code in meetings, and then that translates out onto the field. So in creating that language, and I thought this was very powerful, a language across the whole team, across the whole coaching staff, you have everybody who can coach those details. So that defensive back coach who's positioned a little bit differently, maybe on the field or on the other side from maybe the receiver's coach, can take a look at what was happening, and like Coach mentioned, be able to coach that up as well.
No, I mean, I think that's a huge point, because so many of the things we do, both offensively and defensively, are interconnected. As a defensive coach, I'm tracking a ball carrier, but in reality, our offensive players are tracking a block in space. You know, they know where the ball is supposed to insert, so they have a declared leverage in a way they're supposed to defend the defensive player from getting to. So they're saying, okay, I need to stay inside or outside of this player so I can make this block. And those tracking skills are very similar. But I think we've both seen it. The opposite sides of the ball are teaching in complete mishmash of language, even though we want all of our players to do very similar, just fundamental movement patterns.
And I know at this point, we're mid-season for a lot of people, so it becomes hard to go back and create that language. And I would say that's a really good exercise for a staff in the off-season. But I think at this point, we can focus on some of those schemes and details we want to get out of them that are going to be in the game plan. And I think a staff sitting down and sharing their game plans, both offensively and defensively at this point, is going to go pretty far in being able to understand what everybody on the field is supposed to do. So now you are adding those set of eyes, maybe from the defensive side, a coach might be able to see one of those things and help out a little bit, even if it's not taking over the coaching of that, but mentioning to the receiver's coach, being able to talk to him real quick and say, hey, here's what needed to happen, and communicating with some of that brevity code that you could create in a short meeting at the beginning of the week.
Yeah, or even something as simple as your defensive, we'll say your secondary coach, who's really schooled up on coverages, you know, maybe he can see something, that a little wrinkle that your opponent is doing in coverage. And that quick, you know, communication, that goes back to offensive and defenses that call the coverages or the fronts the same so that they're speaking the same language. You know, what if your defensive backs coach is up in the box and he's saying, hey, they're making this tweak in their quarter's coverage. He lets your offensive guys know. That can cue you into a play that might be open.
Wendy, I think what this brings us to is that whole idea of coaching on the run and making sure that we have a common language that we're utilizing. Again, maybe it's something that we could focus on for this week between our coaches and giving each other some key coaching points as to what we want to see and what we want to see our players do. But as was mentioned previously in the clip, not slowing things down for the entire team. So again, finding that balance between coaching on the run at the same time giving the details that we need for our players to be successful.
And something else that Coach said, and was about the translation to the field. And I think that's key. When you think about game day, unless you're going to call a timeout to make a correction, what the players actually have to be able to do is implement your key fixes, your brevity code words, on the run, on the fly within the game. Hey, it's first down. A guy makes a mistake. Yeah, the defensive coordinator is yelling some instruction from the sideline, and now he needs to implement it the next play. So I actually think that coaching on the run and not stopping the play better prepares them for game day, because now they're going to have to execute the solution the very next play in real time, which is what actually happens on Friday night.
I think that's a great point, Andy, that in order for us to be effective as coaches, that we do need to find a way to communicate on game day. And sometimes it is on the sideline. Sometimes it's being able to shout something out to a player who's out on the field who can make those corrections right away, real time. So it all goes back to that language, though. And I think the key to being able to coach the details is breaking down what every single one of your players needs to do. What are the key coaching points, and how can you phrase those into some memorable cues? I know Coach brought up the one, and there was, you know, some rhyme in it. he had some rhyme in that as well. For example, he said, even feet will get you beat. So when you can think about some of those learning cues, sometimes it's acronyms, sometimes it's alliteration, sometimes it's a rhyme. It goes back to some of those things we do in classroom teaching to get our students to remember what they need to do to be able to be proficient at a certain classroom type of skill. Well, that same thing applies out on the field.
100%. And, you know, while we may have more time, even if we're going fast in meeting, to expand upon some things, our practice field and game day communications are going to need to be brief. So how do we build meaning into our brevity codes, into our rhymes, into our alliteration, so the players know exactly what we want? And I think that gives us the best form of quick, concise communication to be able to make those corrections on the fly. Another thing that I encourage coaches to do is think about the fact that one perfect rep isn't actually going to solve our problems on game day. So we'll use the example that a cornerback uses poor technique and gets beat to be a 7-on-7 or team period. And traditionally, some guys would have the thought process of, hey, line it up, let's do it again. So, well, on the run, you can ask the player, like, hey, what happened? And if he said, like, I missed my footwork, well, if the player understands the footwork, if he's proven to you he can do the footwork before, he knows he just flubbed it on that one rep, you have to kind of ask yourself, is repeating that just so we can do the footwork right worth it? Or is the correction already been made because conceptually that player has made the connection? So maybe we can just have that brief talk. Hey, what happened? What should you have done? Oh, you know what you should have done. You know the right skill. All right, let's make the correction on the fly and go. And that can sort of start guiding when you need an extra rep versus when you just need to have that brief conversation in the natural 25 seconds in between plays.
And I think you can have some fun with this too as you look at and create your brevity code. And as I said, I think a big project for your staff off season, but something you can do right now. I look at, as an example, a spacing concept we used to run in. And just think of this as a 3-by-1 set. We have our middle player in the 3-by-1 is going to be our first look on this. We want the quarterback to hit it on rhythm, and he's going to get to the inside 7 steps and sit down. Ideally, we get him right over the ball. It just depends on how the spacing of the receivers is in a particular formation. So that wasn't necessary all the time, but he's going 7 steps and he's going to sit down. Outside of him, the number one receiver is essentially running that same route, and then the inside receiver is running an arrow or a flat route. Now, the details of this is where it becomes very important, because a spacing play, as it's called, is really about how you get those players spaced in a way that they can attack the underneath coverage and essentially put three offensive guys on 2 defenders. So you're going to have the opportunity by numbers to be right unless you don't have those details correct. So one of the big details on that spacing was for that initial route, and I said mostly our Y who's coming in 7 steps and sitting down. And for him, a lot of receivers like the idea of, well, if I don't get the ball, I'm going to work open. So the coaching point we had, and I alluded to, I like rhymes, I like alliterations. Well, for that coaching point, it's no ball, be a wall. So he needs to sit down, essentially find a linebacker who might be inside of him and force that guy to bubble over the top or underneath to put himself in poor position to defend against that spacing play. So it's looking for those little techniques, those little details that are going to make your play better. Because over the course of the season, teams are on to you. There's no secrets now. Everybody has your film. They can go back a lot of times with the way exchanges work now on Huddle. They can see every single game you have, and if they want to break those down, they could do it. What it really comes down to is the execution of those plays and the attention to detail that goes into it. Now, instead of having to go through and coaching that player up with a minute-long dissertation on why I need to do that, I can refer back to no ball, be a wall, which I also probably should have installed in my meeting. In that way, in that up-tempo language, as Coach Shenander mentioned, that Scott Frost started to implement after meeting with the Blue Angels.
No, and then going back to the inter-staff communication, if you're the receivers coach, but you're up in the box on game day, what you want to make sure happens, obviously, is that the corrections from the sideline in real time are in line with your teaching. So now if your quarterback coach is down on the sideline, he sees a mistake on your spacing concept, and he starts going into the dissertation or voicing in his words what that number three receiver needs to do, instead of using your wall terminology, it can become confusing to the players. So that's why part of that coaching on the run and coaching on the fly allows your staff to get in alignment, because during that 7-on-7 or during that team period, you're getting a glimpse of how we're presenting these things to the different position groups if it hasn't been set from an in-season standpoint. And to your point, for those staffs that haven't done it, we're mid-season, you can start to pick some of that stuff up during your practice this week. What are the receivers being told and the quarterbacks being told and the running backs being told on this particular concept, so that we can speak the same language, make quick on-the-run corrections in the practice field, and then translate those to game day when we may be taking corrections from other coaches? I know I ran into this situation as the outside linebackers coach. We were running the very typical cross blitz with both of our backers. So we were syncing both of our backers inside on the blitz. So our outside linebacker to the tight end side, his job was always going to be contain. But because we were losing the backers, we knew that we had to, by all means, keep the ball inside and send it back to our help. So in the classroom, I had taught that if we were going to cheat our alignment, the terminology was we were going to cheat to an unreachable alignment, that no matter what, we could not be reached by that tight end. Well, I had done a poor job and hadn't communicated that terminology to the rest of the defensive staff. So when we go to walkthrough, our defensive coordinator is quizzing the backers, and he goes to our starting Sam and says, "What's your alignment on this?" And he very confidently looks at our defensive coordinator and says, "Unreachable." Well, our defensive coordinator didn't know what that meant. So me teaching it in practice or in the film room and me yelling it out from the sideline didn't mean as much, because it wasn't a shared reality at that point. And that's when I learned my lesson that our key teaching points need to make sure they're shared, even if they're not all staff language, like you had mentioned. It can just be that meeting. Hey, this week we're going to do X. Make sure we sit down and say, "Hey guys, I'm going to tell my players this," and make sure there's a nod of agreement and everyone understands that in this formation, we're going to tell this guy to do this. And that can go a long way in the point, the attention to detail, because we know what our alignment is, what our responsibility is with one simple cue.
I think as we look at this, Andy, and we look at both our self-scout and what we're actually doing on the field as we evaluate our previous game, as well as what we're going to do in this next game plan, that some of these coaching points, these attention to detail things we're talking about, really translate into drills. So for example, maybe I saw in previous game film that I have that receiver who is trying to, instead of no ball be a wall, he's trying to work open and then closing that gap that essentially takes away the quarterback's next progression. Now we can work in a drill, and it doesn't have to even, I think at this point, we get tied to our 5-minute periods. Maybe it only takes a rep or two to remind those guys and to work that and show them how they're doing it to get them to do it, and then you can move on to something else. So over the course of the season, don't get tied and be rigid to this has to be a 5-minute period all the time, because it might only take one or two reps. And from a game plan perspective, let's say this week we've added a different formation into our package here, and now the guy who typically runs the spot route that we're talking about, whose rule is no ball be a wall, is a guy who had been running that arrow route. And maybe way back in August, they all learned how to install it, but he hasn't done it a while. So we want to make sure he's clear on that coaching point. And so we get that guy a rep or two at that, and we teach that in a short individual period. Again, maybe it's 5 minutes, maybe it's shorter than that. The idea is that they're secure on that coaching point in detail, so that play, when we carry it over to our team setting and to game day, we're going to be successful.
And that's a great point, and I think it ties together multiple things we're saying. Do we need to repeat reps, or can we just have a conversation about our assignment or our technique. Do we need to do a 5-minute period, or do we need to just do a couple reps to sharpen the sword? And there's a term from the medical community on lowest effective dose, right? So when you're dealing with medicine, you traditionally want to go with the lowest effective dose because we don't want to overload these people with medicine. And I think at this point in the season, that's a great way to look at your practice. What's the lowest effective dose we can give to our players to accomplish our goals, teach our things, but keep their legs fresh and make sure we're ready on game day? I think that can help guide your coaching on the run. And I think that can help guide the repetitions in your brevity code on how are we going to teach and install these items.
I think, Andy, we've talked about offense. We've talked about defense in our podcast. We always like to give some attention to the special teams as well. And so thinking of applying this idea, the brevity code, the attention to detail, to some of the different skills we have on special teams become important. And one of those ideas was for our protection. And the guys who, a lot of times, we think about the guys who are going to protect are also going to be good cover guys. And so they may be very good at covering space. They may need to be coached up a little bit more on how do they block in those particular periods. And, you know, I'll use the example of a pro style punt where our guys are going to kick slide back a couple steps. Eventually, if a team is attacking, they're going to get into that guy. And if they don't know how to use their footwork correctly, there's a good chance that they can get driven back or driven to a side that opens a gap for someone to come through for a block. So very simple drill that we utilize for this. And this is one that I got from coaching offensive line and being familiar with the work of Scott Peters, who put together our tip of the spear contact system, was using a physio ball to get these guys a little bit more of that acceleration and teach them to essentially brace their feet and have a short hop that now gets their feet behind them, allows them to stop that penetration, stop that movement, because if they were to stay in a staggered foot alignment, just naturally the way the body works, they're going to get driven backwards and not be able to stop that. So just a real quick thing, we worked that for just a few minutes before we went into some of our punt reps, especially as the season went on. We know coaches are maybe decreasing the amount of practice time out on the field, so we want to be efficient. But every day to get into some of that, whether it was with a partner driving back and forcing you to do that brace hop, or if it was with somebody on the sideline maybe working with a guy who was struggling, we'd put the physio ball between him. And kind of the natural rebound effect gives a little bit more force and forces that guy to get his feet back to parallel and essentially do what we call the brace hop. He would get his feet in the ground, insteps in the ground, execute just a very short hop, and now he's braced and then can execute a rip move or whatever to get into his coverage because he stopped that threat.
No, and I think this, again, is a great way to tie everything together. So we've given ourselves a tool. We've given ourselves a brevity code. We have a quick name for it. Now we go to practice and we have a bad rep of it. So when coach walks out on the field here and says, hey, what happened? He says, I got driven back. And he says, what should we have done? We got to brace hop that. Well, again, do we need to repeat that whole punt? Or can we simply say, you know what you need to do? All right, let's hit it this next rep. And maybe the next day during pre-practice, you hit a couple reps. So I think it ties everything together by having a clearer vision of what everyone is doing, what our techniques are, and then finding unique ways to train it while keeping the pace of practice really, really high. And that's going to keep our pace up, which is what a lot of guys are after. It's also going to allow us to keep the total volume down as we get further along in the season.
Andy, some great tips today. Really enjoyed this conversation on coaching attention to detail in an up-tempo environment. I want to encourage our listeners to go to blogs.usafootball.com and look up our show notes on these. We do include some diagrams. We do include links to some of the detailed articles on these types of things for today. Today, for example, I'll put in our brace hop and how we use that in punt. Did have an article on that in the past. And we'll continue to provide you some resources and help you think about different ways you can get more into your practice and be more effective throughout the week.
Yeah, great point. I know last week we had some great videos as well as some diagrams. So the concepts are here in word form on the podcast, but we want to make sure we're providing the coaches with resources to take the field as well. So we'll make sure to do a great job of keeping those notes updated with useful videos, images, and diagrams that can help you guys be more attentive to detail and understand the concepts we're talking about.
And last thing I want to mention, our registration for National Conference, which is February 22nd through 24th in Orlando, is open. I would highly recommend you getting there. I think this is a great opportunity to network. We have some outstanding guys in both classroom and presentation settings as well as on-field settings where we're going to get into some of the details like Andy and I talk about here in the podcast. You can go to usafootball.com/NC19podcast to register for the event. Again, I highly recommend it for you and your staff. It's been a great event. Over 1,000 coaches from all over the country, guys coming together to solve problems. I can tell you the meals are outstanding, better than any kind of clinic or conference I've ever been to, and the networking as well. You know, you have a lot of these just impromptu clinics breaking out in between sessions, and we set up some whiteboards. We set up tables where guys can get together and talk about some different concepts and ideas. Again, I highly encourage you to be a part of that. It's usafootball.com, NC19 podcast. We'll put the link in the show notes as well.
As always, Keith, really appreciate the conversation. I think looking at, you know, our drills, how we assign them, also the structure of practice and tools for just being a sharper, quicker communicator on the field can always help a coach. We say we'll learn from anyone and we'll always look to get better. So we appreciate you guys trying to get better with us.
Good luck to everybody this week, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.